The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, Luke O'Neill, the immunologist from Trinity College Dublin, regular on the Pat Kenny Show. You're going to hear him this weekend on News Talk, actually. Standing in for one, Anton Savage is with me to place his favourite read up on our bookshelf. So, Luke, was this an easy question to answer when we said you had to pick one book
No.
from amongst all the books in the world?
It's impossible, because it's too difficult. And I guess people pick the same books, I imagine, as well. You know?
Well, I assume people have a bit of recency bias.
Yeah, that's what I have for this one. Yeah, so
okay.
I have, yeah. So I've picked Joseph O'Connor. Now, you know him as a great novelist.
Yes.
And his famous book, Star of the Sea, remember? But it's called Shadow Play. I read it about a year ago, and it really got me, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating.
What do you like about it?
Well, it's about Bram Stoker, who we all know. It's a fictionalized account of him going to London and his time in London and his inspiration for Dracula. And very nicely, his friendship with Oscar Wilde, because people don't realize him and Oscar were friends. They were contemporaries in Trinity. And I know a bit about him, because when I give people tours of Trinity, I go to where he used to live and I mention some of this stuff. So there we have it in Joseph's book. He describes this in great vivid detail. So it's a really good one.
And are you generally a fan of historical novels like that, if that's what you'll describe it as?
As I've got older, I've got sick of fiction. Have you not, Kieran?
A little bit at times.
And I like a bit of history. I like a bit of factual stuff. If they combine the two and they describe a historical event in a fictional way, that can be great.
And does Joseph O'Connor do a good job of you know, painting the picture of this world they lived in?
He does. Now, this is the 1890s and it's the world of Jack the Ripper. And of course, that inspires Bram Stoker with the horrible, macabre stuff, you know. And he describes all the fog. It's a bit like Sherlock Holmes again.
Yeah.
And Joseph does a superb job at describing London at that time, you know, and all the squalor and all the various excitement. London at that time was the most busy city in the world, of course. You know, he captures all that wonderfully. And he captures the theatrical life, because Stoker goes to London to run a theatre called the Lyceum Theatre for a guy called Henry Irving. And it turns out this is true, by the way. Irving is the inspiration for Dracula. Because Stoker, he basically sexed up vampires. He gets the credit for this. But before Stoker wrote Dracula, vampires were twisted, ugly, odious creatures. Now we find Dracula, this tall, debonair character.
Yes.
That was Henry Irving. It turns out the actor inspired Stoker, and Joseph captures all that wonderfully well.
Were you a fan of the Stoker novel of Dracula?
I was. Have you read it?
Yeah, I only read it about 4 or 5 years ago for the first time, and it is brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's a bit Victorian in its phraseology, but again, it's one of the greatest works of horror, isn't it? And again, O'Connor goes into the detail what inspired Stoker. He was also inspired partly because his marriage wasn't as success. This is true. And they reckon that sort of inspired him into all the erotica. He was a bit frustrated, shall we say, because it's a very erotic book,
Dracula,
remember. And they reckon the inspiration came from Bram's own marriage not being quite so successful.
And are you a fan then in general of Joseph O'Connor's writing of Star of the Sea and other novels?
That Star of the Sea is one of the best books ever written, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Revocation. I think he's very good at that historical stuff and bringing it to life and the characters. And I guess I love that as a way to do things. And Joseph deserves credit, I think, for conveying these worlds to
us. So he's absolutely in that category of author for whom, if a new book is coming out, you're buying it regardless of what it's about. I'll buy that book.
Yeah, never lets you down. You know?
Yes.
And his last couple of books have been great as well. I love it as well, Kieran, when he describes Stoker meets Oscar Wilde in London in the novel. And he describes that in great detail. And Wilde's wit, Joseph manages to imagine meeting Oscar Wilde. At that time, he's like David Bowie or something, you know. And Wilde is very witty. He slags off Henry Irving, the actor, who says to him, "Oh, we gave you primitive Irish, your language, didn't we?" And Wilde goes, "Yeah, you taught us the word starvation." Which is brilliant.
Yes.
That's exactly what Wilde might have said to Irving, I guess, in real life.
So when you say you've gotten sick of fiction, just your bog standard fiction, if we'll call it that, have you always been a good reader, though, of novels?
Yeah, I was. When I was younger, I loved fiction when I was younger.
What types of books?
But as you get older, you go, I can't read another story, really.
Yeah.
Maybe we've lived a bit too much life, you know. But I did love all the famous. Like, remember the Leaving Cert, Lord of the Flies?
Yes.
A superb book, for instance. Many of us never escape our Leaving Certs, do we? So, but they were great examples of great stories. So I was into it all those years ago.
And nowadays, though, for you to read a fiction, it would have to have some sort of other element to it.
Yeah, to learn. Maybe I'm always learning. Learn some factual stuff as well, but I'm enjoying the fiction.
Louise says that Bram Stoker's house in Marino is an Airbnb now.
Isn't that shocking? Yeah. That'd be a good place to rent them when there's any vampires
out
there.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, spooky night away. Are you fans of the, whenever people mention historical fiction to me, I have to ask whether they're fans of the Wolf Hall trilogy, Hilary Mantel's books.
Yeah, but one of those. Yeah.
Only one, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Luke, come on. I read them all. Yeah. Again, that captures something, doesn't it?
You know, it's incredible.
It's a real talent, I think, for a fiction writer to capture some historical context. And you live in that world. I mean, when I read the Joseph O'Connor book, I felt I was living in London in the 1890s. It's conveyed so powerfully. You get taken up in the whole place, really, you know.
Yeah, no, there's kind of an untapped or an endless seam, rather, of historical fiction out there for people who kind of want to delve into it. And yeah, I love that particular era. Andrew Taylor is other ones that are slightly set a little bit later during the Stuart dynasty, or C.J. Samson, who passed away only last year, I think, has this great Shard Lake series of books, which in a way it just takes your standard, there's a dead body and somebody's investigating it, but it's happening against the backdrop of Tudor England and Elizabethan England and all of that, and it's all very exciting, and you get a sense of that world.
Yeah, you feel you're part of it in a strange way, you know, and Joseph really captures that.
What was your favourite type of book to read as a child growing up, or say as a young reader, maybe a young adult reader?
That's a good question. I suppose I like Paddington, strangely. When I was 11 and 12 years of age, I read all the Paddington books. I thought they were brilliant. You know? Yeah. I'm too old for Harry Potter. You probably read Harry Potter.
No, I was just after me.
I love Paddington. Very funny. You know, my memory of those is laughing out loud at some of the things that Paddington got up to. So that was a real favourite.
So we always allow people kind of honourable mention of something else, because it is very hard to pick a single book. So what else would you like to mention?
Well, I like science fiction as well, of course, being a scientist. Mm-hmm. And one of the best science fiction books I've read is called Project Hail Mary by a guy called Andy Weir. Now you'll know him because you're The Martian. He's famous for The Martian, you know. It's his follow-up to The Martian.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic science fiction book, and it's brilliant, yeah. And what it's about is the sun starts to go dim. Now can you imagine that means we're all dead, right?
Yeah.
And they wonder why. And they discover an alien is coming from Venus to suck up all the energy from the sun. And they're named astrophages, which means sun eater. Now, I work on macrophages in the immune system, so that struck a chord with me. And it's all about the mission to save the sun. And the main character, he's called Ryland Grace, very interesting character. He goes off to try and stop the sun dimming, and it's all about his adventure in space to come up with a way to kill these alien life forms that are sucking energy from the sun.
And are you good to suspend disbelief when you read these books? Or is there still the scientist in you who thinks, no, that doesn't work now?
I don't like fantasy. Let's start with that.
Okay.
So my science fiction has to be somewhat plausible. Let's put it that way. And there has to be some basis for it.
Yeah.
And maybe there will be some strange energetic thing that sucks energy from the sun. That's not, it seems unlikely, but you never know. And so I like being somewhat plausible. And then they make a spaceship. They capture some of these strange creatures, by the way.
Yeah.
And use them as a source of fuel to go off into space to find out the predator of this alien. And the main character goes off through space using this high source of energy, and that might be possible. It's okay to strain.
Yeah.
So I like my science fiction to be almost believable. The best being Star Trek, of course, which has come true, much of that, as you know.
So were you a big Star Trek fan?
Oh, huge. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Big Trek, of all the TV series?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like the Next Generation is the best. I think that beats
Is it
the
your
original.
Favorite?
I think so. Yeah, I like Picard and those characters. The original is a bit stiff. Do you not think so?
With
those actors, it's not quite as good.
What about there's newer iterations that are only on Paramount and places like this. I haven't really watched them.
No, me neither.
So,
no.
But were you a fan of like Deep Space? Like this is real. Were you a fan of Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, to some extent.
Voyager.
Yeah, I would watch them. You know, but you can't beat Picard in my view as the captain. You know?
And why did you like it so much?
I think again, it was just the storylines were wacky, weren't they?
You know? They were wacky.
And then secondly, feasible, you know, like now in Star Trek there's the sliding doors. They hadn't been invented. There's iPads in Star Trek, what we now call iPads, and at the
tricorders
time, and at the time nobody thought that would come true. I think something like a third of Star Trek has come true, you know.
Yeah.
And in medicine I watched that very closely, all the scanners and ways to diagnose, some of that's coming true as well. So I like the science fiction somewhat.
You fancy Dr. Crusher?
Of course we all did, didn't we? We all did. What a great character she was, you know.
So can I ask about The Martian as well? Because that was a huge hit as well, obviously, as a movie with Matt Damon. And I do remember loads of articles at the time being written about how plausible it was. You know, could you grow up a day? Could you kind of seal yourself into this kind of bubble on Mars and use your own waste to grow potatoes and stuff like this? Did you enjoy all of that?
I did, and that's feasible. The only food source you could survive on is potatoes, actually. It's got all the nutrients and vitamins. So that was really well researched. The best ones are probably probably have scientists advising them, you know,
yes,
to say how feasible they are. And the complexity of energetics in the cosmos, that's why Weir is drawing on sort of research behind that, you know. So again, it's somewhat feasible that he would do that.
So that's Andy Weir's Project Hail Mary, but he's written a whole series of novels, kind of science fiction novels. The Martian is the one, as Luke says, the people will know well, but honourable mention to Project Hail Mary. What are you currently reading, or what have you recently read?
Well, I can't avoid real science, Kieran. I'm reading Airborne. Now, Airborne, it's a famous book in my business, right? It's just come out, called Carl Zimmer. And it's all about how you can get infected from the air. And I guess what the inspiration of that was, it was COVID, obviously, triggered him to write this book. And it's the history of scientists discovering you can get infected just stuff in the air. And it's a really good historical account of the science behind that. It was controversial when it began in the 1930s. Nobody believed inhaling air could infect you. That seemed like unlikely.
Yeah.
And all the evidence began to build up on that. And he starts actually with COVID. Because as you may remember, when COVID began on March 10th, a choir, 58 people got infected and 2 people died from just singing. And that was the start of the idea that COVID was spread on the air. And that he opens with that, you see, and it's a dramatic opening. Yeah? And then he goes through the whole history of it. So it's a really good account of airborne infections.
Well, what theory did the airborne, did that theory displace?
Well, the idea was the miasma, as you may remember, that the air itself was dirty and infecting people. And that was discredited. They realize eventually it's bacteria or viruses in the air are causing the infection rather than bad air per se. So once they can use microscopes, they can see germs in the air, first of all.
Mm.
They start doing experiments to prove air can infect you. The other thing that was possible was droplets, as you may remember. Remember in COVID, we all thought about droplets were spreading the infection.
Yes.
That's not the case. It's aerosols. It stood in the air, but it wasn't droplets. And again, at the time, that would have been controversial. And the way he describes the science behind this is really brilliant. And my favourite experiment there, Kieran, was with COVID. Remember, it was controversial at the time. They took air from a ward of people infected with COVID, took the air from the ward and showed the air itself could infect hamsters. And that can't be droplets because they fall out of the air.
Yes.
The first indication there was this aerosol, this, you know, like feathers almost in the air was a source of infection. So he describes that experiment very well.
How much, because most of us, and I know this because from listening to yourself and Pat chat, but for people who don't maybe hear it, it doesn't suit their time of day or whatever. How much did we learn from that experience? Because lots of people have just moved on. Understandably, they're just
sick
right,
of it.
I'm done. No more COVID.
Imagine how I feel about it. Well, we've learned you can get infected in aerosols.
Yeah.
So when the next pandemic comes, I know it sounds terrible, but we won't be doing the 2 meter rule. That's for droplets.
Yes.
You know, you need ventilation. So in the book, he makes a strong case, put the ventilation in now in anticipation of the next pandemic being airborne. Every school should have good ventilation. And we all say this now from what we learned. You know, so hopefully there will be more people behind this notion. Maybe in the National Development Plan, they're going to put ventilation in the schools, are they? Because that really does spread the infection and stops it then, you know, infecting people. So that was one big thing we learned.
Yeah, isn't it funny though? And I know you and I would have talked about it at the time, and you and Pat at the time, and you and Pat since as well. But just the psychology of it, it was impossible to unwind the 2 meter rule.
Yeah, it was.
Because it was a source of comfort for people.
Yeah, that's right. And it is in droplets as well. Let's put it that way. It's useful to some extent, but it's not enough. You need the 2 meter rule plus great ventilation to really stop the thing spreading. And that's what we learned from the pandemic.
So I mentioned you're standing in for Anton this weekend. How much do you enjoy doing that?
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's the city season, right? Not quite today, but...
But don't say, you're not meant to tell people that now.
No. I love doing it. It's great fun. And I'm very grateful to Aoife, the producers, as you know, in Youthstock.
Aoife's amazing. So great producers. You're in good hands.
I'll pick a couple of things I'm interested in. Might play a bit of music, you know, so it's great fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so what are the types of things that you never get to talk about on radio that maybe you're listening to radio and you think, God, I wish I could go on and talk about that instead of bloody immunology.
Yeah. Anything musical. That's my big hobby, you know, so we're hoping to do a bit of music. The last time I did it, they had a choir came into the studio actually and sang. It was great, you know, post-COVID, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. None of them infected you.
But it's just a bit of fun, you know, and then the topics they pick somewhat suit me, you know, so I'm looking forward to seeing what Aoife comes up with. And I'm making a few suggestions. So one thing I'm doing actually on the second show is there's a big campaign about cancer, about the start, right?
Yeah.
It's called Breakthrough Cancer Research. I'm going to interview the CEO of that. That'll be a good thing to talk about, you know.
Okay.
So little things I'm interested in will also be part of it.
Where is the next the next frontier in terms of breakthroughs in cancer research?
Yeah. Well, it's my area, immunology. Mm. I mean, the big triumphs in the past, 10, 15 years is getting the immune system to kill a tumour. And that was always our dream. And now it's happening and it's getting better. You know, if you can get the immune system to recognise the tumour as foreign, use the same weapons it would use against the bacteria, you might well be able to clear the tumour. And more evidence suggest that's happening, you know. And we have maybe 20% survival now in lung cancer with immunotherapy, more than it was before because of immunotherapy. So we're seeing lots of progress there.
Yeah,
and that's what this is all about, really.
Well, listen, there'll be some of that. There'll be plenty of music and much more besides on the Anton Savage Show with Luke O'Neill this weekend. Luke, pleasure. Listen, and thanks a million for coming in
thanks
to
so
us.
Much,
Luke O'Neill's favourite book up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf, Shadow Play by the great Joseph O'Connor.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.